Hi, I'm Kathy Forstie, music director at KC Cafe Radio. Clever rock has been one way the Enzymes' music has been described. Band members Murphy Dunn, Rob Lewin, Larry Treadwell, and Howard Green are veteran musicians who have brought together their eclectic backgrounds and formed a group that is unique, filled with brilliant musicianship and fun, but sometimes slightly serious songs that only these four members' minds can create. Thanks so much, Murphy, Rob, Larry, and Howard, for taking the time to talk with me today on KC Cafe Radio.
Well, thank you.
Thank Hello. You, yes.
Great to be here.
First thing I want to ask you guys is, and I don't think I've ever found this out, is how did you come up with the name The Enzymes?
A long and torturous process. boy.
We developed lists sequentially of hundreds of names and somehow wound up with this one.
Well, we had the name and we were driving everybody crazy because we had to come up with one and we couldn't agree. And Rob went to the medicine cabinet. Is that not how it happened?
I don't remember. I must have taken the medicine.
You took the medicine and brought it in and said, how about the enzymes? And Larry said, yeah. So we all said, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I figured that's an invention, but we'll go with it.
If that's an invention, I'd like to remind me.
Oh, okay.
How did the four of you guys get together? And the band was formed in 2006. Had you guys known each other before that?
Well, Murphy and I, this is Rob speaking, Murphy and I had known one another. We worked together as writers on a film, actually. It was another story completely. And sometime around 2004 or 5, I started playing music again after a long, long hiatus. And Murphy and I got together to jam in the back room of a place called Stein on Vine,
which is across the street from Local 47, the Musicians Union. And it's kind of a hangout for musicians, and there's several pianos back there. And we would go in there and jam, and Rob would say things like, we need a drummer. And I'd say, I don't want to have to deal with that. Eventually, what happened, Rob?
Well, I tackled him. He was sitting on it at the piano bench, and I threw a full body block on him and got him on the ground and said, there will be a drummer. And it went on for about, 20 or 30 minutes. I finally let you up when you agreed. Yeah, he agreed.
That was inspired, yeah. Rob. I like
Thank
that.
You. And it was with no intent other than just to have a drummer. We were playing Murphy's tunes and some covers. I wasn't writing at that point. I just thought it would just be fun to have a drummer. There was no intention beyond that. The drummer we got was a guy I knew and whom it turns out both Larry and Howard knew because he was the house drummer at the Groundlings for years, Greg Kanega.
Greg lived
Take it
here.
From there. Take it.
Yeah.
Back.
Well, Greg lived in the house in a room, and as well as I did, down the hall from him. And one Saturday, he said, "You know, I'm going to go jam with these guys, and hey, do you want to come along?" And normally, I'd avoid that like the plague, but for some reason, it just seemed like a fun thing to do. So I tagged along and got caught up in the web.
Then Greg disappeared. Well, like really just like a couple of sessions later, Greg was gone, right?
Well, no, it was how long was
no,
it?
No, I would say it's closer to 4 months.
Yeah, it was months.
Was it
for
really?
Sure?
No,
okay. Oh yeah, okay. Yeah.
But he didn't say goodbye.
Yeah. But he gave us Howard, or Larry did.
Yeah, meanwhile this is Howard. Meanwhile, I had taken over from Greg at the Groundlings for the house as the house drummer, and Larry invited me to come check out this new band that he's gotten involved with. So that's how I came into this.
And then after about 5 or 6 years of Rob and Murphy auditioning for these two guys, they said, okay, we'll play with you. So they started recording.
Yeah, they showed incredible endurance and hanging in.
Until we still haven't made a final decision.
Right.
Yes, right.
It's actually a sensitive subject.
We're holding our options. Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt that Larry has a place to record and play, right?
It's a gift.
Yeah, sure.
Understatement. And we should say that through Howard came Roxanne Mayweather and Phyllis Bailey Brooks, who are the active ingredients. These are two women singers who are friends since childhood, whom Howard had worked with And they're a perfect fit. I mean, they're just delightful people, wonderfully talented, great senses of humor, kind and deep and thoughtful.
I wanted to touch a bit on all your backgrounds, because all of you have such amazing backgrounds in music. And so I'm kind of going to go one by one and get some information on that. Rob, where are you originally from? And share a little bit about some of the people that you've worked with musically and what you did before you started doing music with the Enzymes.
I grew up in Manhattan, stayed on the East Coast till I was 20, didn't really start playing until I was 20. And then within a couple of years, I wound up in a bunch of bands, the first of which was a band on Columbia Records called Illinois Speed Press. And that led to other bands and jamming with all kinds of interesting and well-known people. And then, while only 26 or so, I stopped because I realized that I wasn't making any money. Mm-hmm. And went into a career as a photographer and stayed there for over 30 years, not playing during that time.
Mm-hmm.
So around the time that Murphy and I started hanging out together, I'd been playing again for only a year or two.
And you also worked in movies and did a movie with Harrison Ford?
That's, I directed my Project 2 film at UCLA with Harrison. We were buddies, had been for years. And I had had a very successful Project 1 at UCLA. It was actually the first film to be put into the Royce Hall screenings, which was kind of a big deal. So I thought at that point that I was Orson Welles. And I made a very, very ambitious Project 2. Harrison was not the only famous guy in that film. Wavy Gravy was in the film. Paul Winfield and a woman named Ann Ramsey, who went on to win an Academy Award for Throw Mama from the Train. But it was chaos. The film was chaos.
Is that the title?
No, that was the result.
Oh, I see.
And actually never got into the edit bay, much less out of it. I shut it down. I thought it was a disaster. But that's a much, much longer story.
Yeah. So if you weren't making any money and as a musician, you certainly weren't making any money as a filmmaker.
No, I was a student.
Okay.
But I did work for The Doors as a cinematographer for a while and shot part of their documentary.
And what was it like to be around those guys?
Gosh. Well, it was certainly fascinating. I knew Ray Manzarek and didn't really know Jim Morrison, but they were also UCLA Film School. They were a couple of years ahead of me. So I was brought in really through an intermediary, someone else who was not a UCLA student but was close to them. And, you know, it did not have the sheen of history on it at that point. They were just guys who were having success. And so it didn't have any kind of particular magic around it, I guess. Yeah. It was a job.
Yeah. Do you understand why they've become so iconic? I mean, was there something
absolutely
back in those days that you could touch on?
Well, absolutely. Jim Morrison was hypnotic on stage, and I think they had a unique sound. Mm-hmm. And I think their first album was kind of a minor masterpiece.
Yeah. I agree. And so where are some of the places people would know your photography from? What magazines have they been in?
I was a Life photographer.
Mm-hmm.
And I also worked for a lot of other publications like Fortune and Forbes and Newsweek and Time and Esquire and Smithsonian and Travel and Leisure and Town and Country and Rolling Stone and Vanity Fair. And for film studios and television networks and corporations, I was really in it. In fact, in a way, I still am.
Yeah. Were you doing landscapes or portraits, or what was your forte?
Landscapes are not commercially assigned pretty much ever.
Uh-huh.
I could think of one exception, and that's when Mount St. Helens blew up, and Life sent a guy out to photograph the devastation at varying degrees of distance from the epicenter. But no, it was anything. You had to be a generalist in those days. So it could be people, could be movie stars, it could be Supreme Court justices, it could be immigrants along the border, it could be people who were part of a car club, it could be anything. But mainly it was famous people.
Yeah, well, that's fascinating. I have a friend who's kind of looking into photography as a career, and I just was wondering.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, yeah. It's one of those, you know, midlife crisis things, I think. So, Murphy, I was going to ask you, tell everybody where you're from and how you made your way to L.A.
Well, I'm kind of an actor musician and tunesmithy, you know, just out of hobby, and I sing loudly. And I'm I think more than anything else, a boogie-woogie piano player. I started at a place called Second City in Chicago, and I was Peter Boyle's understudy. I was between Boyle and Belushi, two people who actually had a career as an actor. Mm-hmm. I would occasionally fill in as a person who played the ins and outs of scenes. And I always loved the blues. And at one particular point, someone said to me, you know, Chicago being the home of the blues has never really had a blues festival. And I was politically connected in Chicago, so I went down to the assistant mayor's office and said, is there any Head Start money for a festival with blues musicians? And he said, are you going to produce it? I said, well, through connections, my girlfriend worked at Chess Records. And I said, well, yeah, I'll produce it with Willie Dixon, who I kind of knew. So that's kind of how I got closer back to music, and eventually met Booker T and the MGs, Steve Cropper and Duck Dunn and Al Jackson, and later when John Belushi wanted to do the Blues Brothers, I'd moved out to the West Coast and I'd done some comedy albums for Atlantic Records. Paul Schaefer, whose band it is, and no one could ever replace Paul Schaefer, they called me up and said, Paul's got to do this thing on Broadway with Gilda, would you fill in? And I said, well, I will, but understand you're going to probably need, you know, a studio musician to cut some of the stuff. And they said, oh, that's okay. Will you sing and play? And I said, I'd be happy to. So I got a chance to be in the Blues Brothers movie. This was after another film I did with John Belushi called Old Boyfriends, where, strangely enough, I played the keyboard player.
You're typecast.
Yeah, so, but it's good to be cast as anything in this town. And Mel Brooks, I kind of knew, and he cast me in High Anxiety as the piano player. And so I've done a lot of sitcoms. I've done about 30 sitcoms and about 20 movies. And I'm just blessed with the joy of working with these cats.
Yeah. Which do you enjoy doing more, the acting side or the music side? Or?
Well, when I'm acting, I'm going, damn, I wish I was back with the guys. And when I'm here, I say to myself, gee, I'm glad I'm here. But, you know, acting primarily is auditioning. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of that. And I'm also blessed with the fact that I have a daughter who is now an actress and a regular on a Disney's television series. So people will say to me, so you passed the torch? And I said, no, I slipped it under the door. So that takes care of part of my life now.
What show is she on?
She's a star of a co-star. She's the best friend of Zendaya on a series called Casey Undercover. They shot 29 episodes already.
Yeah, my son is 12 years old, and we spend 90% of the time watching Disney Channel, and he loves that show.
Does she? Well, my daughter's the honky.
Okay.
She's the white girl, and everybody else is black, and I'm thrilled to say that that's the case, because she sure stands out.
Yeah, and she's very pretty and cute, too.
Well, bless you for that. If you want an autographed picture for your son, don't hesitate to ask.
Oh, I'm sure he'd love to have one.
Great.
I'm asking. So.
Give me the information. I'll make sure he gets it.
Okay, great. That'd be wonderful. And you mentioned, you kind of went over this a little bit, you worked with Mel Brooks on High Anxiety.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, I had done a movie where I wrote some of the music at Paramount called The Big Bus, where I played a smarmy lounge pianist. And Mel had heard through the grapevine that that's what I do. So they called me in, and it was funny. I'd met him before with Peter Boyle, as I mentioned. We were buddies. And he introduced me to him and actually did another film with Mel called The Silent Movie. And he's just, as he seems, you know, he's like a used car lot. He's just filled with electricity at all times. He's got, as Rob knows, his peppy ways.
Yeah.
He's a funny, funny fellow.
And he's got a pretty musical mind as well, right?
Without question. Who else could have come up with Springtime for Hitler?
Yeah, he's an incredible, one of the greatest comedians of all time, I think.
a force of nature.
Yes. And Larry, how did you get to L.A., and what does it mean to be the musical director there for the Enzymes?
Patience.
Hang on.
A lot of meditation.
Every day, so I survive. It's wonderful. Quite a treat with it, working with these guys. It's never dull, and it's they're pretty funny guys, as you can tell. I got to L.A. I grew up in Connecticut, and I went to college for 3 years, and then decided to drop out, which of course warmed my mother's heart. but the summer, the very summer that I dropped out, I was playing with a band with musicians from the college I had met there, and we'd been playing for a couple of years together, and we were playing out in Westport, Connecticut, on the back of a flatbed truck in the middle of the day, about 1,000 yards from the police department. And a couple of guys were walking to the theater that day, and they stopped to listen to the band and decided they liked us and skipped their theater engagement. And it turned out to be Andrew Oldham from England. You know, he produced the Rolling Stones and the Faces and all these bands. And he had just moved to Connecticut that year. And so he signed us up with Motown. We did 3 albums with him. And I did some session work for him, stuff like that. And then we decided we would, you know, that we did a bunch of concerts, too, while we were there. We used to open for, you know, the big bands that would come through town and stuff. You know, Stevie Wonder and Earth, Wind, and Fire and people like that. But it sort of got to be, you know, we felt like big fishes in a small pond. So we so wisely packed up our things and drove out to California, where we broke up 6 months later. Turns out they had a few bands here already, so they weren't really paying the big bucks. And we were driving to Colorado and Montana just to play clubs to survive, and decided that wasn't for us. So everybody left, except eventually I was the only one still here. So I just had to start all over again and meet musicians and get involved with bands. In the meantime, I kind of picked up recording because I was writing original material and wanted to be able to hear it back. So, and I didn't like working in other studios because you're kind of at the whim of the engineers and producers there. So that's where I sort of started to get the recording thing going. Mm-hmm. And then I was playing with bands, and some of the bands did really well. There was a band called Sumner that was signed to Electro Asylum in 1980. And then I played with Thomas Dolby in 86 through 89 and toured with him and made a couple albums with him. And he was just a genius. He was so brilliant, mm-hmm. and stuff. And then you know, it was up and down, up and down. And in the late 90s, I got involved with playing at the Groundlings Theater, first as a sub for Probin Gregory, who later went out to play with Brian Wilson. And you know, I was able to do that gig full time. So, and I'm still doing that. So, you know, with Howard and also do a lot of writing, you know, for TV and stuff.
I was going to ask you about that. What are some of the shows you've written music for?
Oh, God. there's so many. A lot of shows that don't even exist, but there's also things like there's been Disney shows. There's been a lot of Nickelodeon shows, it was kind of coincidental. My daughter works in casting, and she worked there for 6 years, but actually had nothing to do with the songs, you know, that I wrote, because I was writing with another woman who was pitching songs to Nickelodeon simultaneously, very successfully. And so, you know, like iCarly and Victorious and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Really good shows. I ended up watching a lot of them because they're just good shows.
Yeah.
It's fun TV.
They are good. Yeah. I mean, as a mother of a young son, I mean, who watches Nickelodeon and Disney at nauseam. You know, I wouldn't be able to watch them if they weren't, you know, something I could stomach. So
they're really fun. Yeah.
Yeah, they are. Tell us about your recording studio, Simple Roger Studios. How did you come up with that name?
It's named after a song I wrote back in the 80s called Simple Roger, a character I just kind of created in my mind. He was a young man coming of age, but he was mentally challenged. And so, you know, he had an affair with a woman, and then she denied it and said he raped her. And it's just a song I wrote. I don't know where it came from, but I hope it doesn't really happen in real life, but everything happens somewhere in real life. But that was a song called Simple Roger, and for some reason, I just named the studio after it.
Yeah.
It's a crazy little place, you know?
So, yeah. Do you play the sitar? I can see in
that was a gift. That was a gift from my mom. I think she finally accepted that I was going to stay a musician and got me that one Christmas. But it's I don't play it legitimately. But I'm keeping it for later in life when I have a little more time.
Uh-huh.
Sit down and try to bow my legs and play that thing.
Yeah. It's got more strings.
Oh, so many.
Howard, you are pretty diverse percussionist. I mean, you play classical and jazz and rock.
Yes.
How did you go from playing classical to playing in rock bands?
Well, when I was a kid, I started out kind of jamming with friends. You know, I got my first drum kit when I was in eighth grade, and just playing a lot of, and I was very fortunate in that the school district had a really, really great music program. So I got to indulge my musical ADD with them, and then I got to play in orchestra, concert band, jazz ensemble, variety shows, musicals, you know, things like that. And which suited me just fine. I grew up in Oconomowoc, Wisconsin, which is between Milwaukee and Madison. And then I was accepted to the Indiana University School of Music and studied classical percussion there with the intention of becoming an orchestral percussionist. But really, I didn't play drum kit for almost 4 years. And then by the time my senior year rolled around, I pretty much changed my mind. I didn't really want to be an orchestral percussionist anymore. So I finished my degree, moved out to Seattle, and was able to do a lot of different things. Played in chamber orchestras and played for dance companies and musical productions, and I, you know, had taken up the drum kit again. So I was touring with rock bands. I did a bunch of touring in Western U.S. and Canada with a couple of different cover bands. And then moved down here in 85. And my work down here has been pretty diverse, but it's been almost all drum set and some percussion, you know, hand percussion mostly.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't had the national exposure that these guys have had, but I've fulfilled my goal, which is to be a full-time working musician.
Yeah.
And it's been, 14 years since my last day job, so I'm happy with that.
Yeah. And how did you get the gig with the Groundlings?
I met the musical director, Willie Etra, back in 1999, and he hired me to play on a soundtrack that he'd written for an A&E documentary. And I think that's where I met Larry for the first time as well, although I knew who Larry was because this Thomas Dolby album, Aliens Ate My Buick, had been, when it first came out, it basically lived on my turntable for about a month. It was just one of my favorite records. And
one of the best album titles of all time, too.
Oh, yes. The cover is pretty great as well. So anyway, Willie, I had done a bunch of musicals and theatrical productions, and so I started subbing for Greg, who was the regular guy there and original Enzymes drummer. Then in January of 2005, I got a message from Willie saying that Greg was leaving and would I be interested in taking over. And so, yeah, April of 2005 was when I became the full-time drummer there.
Mm-hmm. I have never been to a Second City or to a Groundlings performance. So what is the role of the band at one of the shows?
Well, we open the show with a short overture, and then we play in between the scene changes, in between the sketches when they're changing out the stage. We play then. And we opened the second act as well with a short overture called an entr'acte in theater parlance. And then we'll do a curtain call where the cast comes out and takes their bows. But in addition to that, during the improvisations, we'll provide underscoring. We will, they'll do song improvisations, and we'll accompany the actors doing that. And so it's a pretty diverse gig, you know. I mean, oftentimes we're improvising right along with the actors.
Yeah, that's fun. And who decides what songs get played?
Well, we have a big list of tunes. It's kind of fallen to me, I guess. I sort of program the show, you know, and we try to match songs to sketches, you know, as best we can. For example, in the latest show that we're doing, there's a sketch where this guy's being haunted by a couple of very silly ghosts, and we're playing Spirits in the Material World by the Police afterwards, you know. So yeah. That's an example.
Yeah, that's cool. Very clever. Murphy, I was wondering how old were you when you
Murphy,
started playing? Wake up, Murphy. How old were you when you first started playing the piano, and why did you choose the piano over other instruments?
I didn't have another instrument. My sisters played piano, and I thought it would be a great way to meet girls.
Really?
And it worked.
Yeah. Did you play accordion as well, or just...
No, I don't. I would like an accordion to play. I can't afford one, but I love the instrument. I love the sound of the instrument. Mm-hmm. I kind of have a bogus accordion on my keyboard that I'm currently using, mm-hmm. but I love accordion.
Yeah. And were you, like, what music were you listening to at that time? Was it like boogie-woogie music, or?
I was listening to Cripple Clarence Lofton. Obviously a name that everybody knows. But Ray Charles, Jerry Lee Lewis. That's
Yeah, I can hear a lot of that influence in your music, the Jerry Lee Lewis stuff.
Well, bless your heart.
Yeah. And Rob, why did you decide to play the bass?
Well, as with so many things in life, in my life, that have not been decisions, that one was kind of fell to me because when I got to UCLA Film School from Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania, I gravitated into musical groups. And one summer I had a friend, a roommate from Swarthmore, who had been my musical mentor, out for the summer. And we put together a band, and we put it together with a drummer and a guy that we thought would be a perfect bass player, the only fly in the ointment being that he actually couldn't play the bass or anything else. And I had lent him, I think, $50 to buy an instrument. And when he kind of threw up his hands, as we all did at the same time, I got the bass. Yeah. So it was a non-decision. But also, I think in hindsight, it had two strings fewer than a guitar, so I figured it would be at least a third easier.
Yeah. So you were the Paul McCartney of the band, huh?
Just
say sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes, I was the Paul McCartney of the band.
I was the Paul McCartney. Well, that's a musical hero of mine as an everything. Writer, singer, player.
Yeah, he's...
You know, I mean, me and, you know, at least half the planet.
Yeah. Who else do you like as bass players?
Sting?
Well, Sting for sure is a great player. I mean, this is where I always get stymied. I think anybody who ever played on a Motown album is... I'm thinking of Chuck Rainey and James Jamerson, you know, all these avatars of the bass. Tell me who else I like. Doug Dunn is another genius.
Right.
In the bass. I think Joey Spampinato is a spectacular player from NRBQ. Another can-do-it-all kind of guy. But after I've stopped answering the question, after this interview is over, another 50 names will come to me.
Yeah. Who was the lady that was in the Wrecking Crew? What was...
Carol Kay. I know Carol, and actually studied with her very briefly. And she's quite terrific.
She
lives at Desert Hot Springs now.
I did a recording session with Carol Kay.
Yeah, she's incredible. I love her. Yeah. Larry, who you say are some of your guitar heroes?
None of them are any good, really.
None of them are as good as you.
I started out, you know, I really liked Eric Clapton back in the, you know, in the Cream days and stuff. It was very inspiring. When I first heard Jimi Hendrix, I didn't quite get it for a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, being a 15-year-old white boy, and I just, you know, what's this noise? But then I just totally fell in love with what he was doing. And, of course, his writing and everything was great. So, you know, it was the British invasion time and stuff. But I was more interested in playing keyboards because I was really fascinated by the guys that were in those bands, you know, like the Animals and British bands mostly.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to play that, but my dad said I couldn't afford it, you know, so he said, your brother's got an old guitar. Why don't you try playing that? He'll give it to you for free. So that's what I did, and I don't mind.
Yeah.
Actually, I kind of have a knack for it, I thought, and I learned it real fast, so I was able to play in a band within like 6 months of starting to play, so... Mm-hmm.
One of the things that Larry can do, which is kind of amazing, is he still has great keyboard abilities, and he can reach over to the keyboard and play it upside down. Mm-hmm. And go, why don't you play this or this? And I think it's like the spies who were able to read documents upside down. He can read the keyboard upside down.
Yeah. Sounds like he's a multi-instrumental.
He is a multi-instrumentalist.
And a psychiatrist.
Yeah. And a hell of a gardener, because there's something growing out back that's so exotic we couldn't identify it.
I didn't plant it.
Is it legal? It might be legal there.
I'm not sure. We'd have to call the health department.
So I wanted to know, too, Larry, what guitar do you play? Are you a Les Paul guy? Are you a Fender guy? What do you...
Tell her about the number of string instruments you have.
Yeah, I kind of don't want, you know, I never really made up my mind, so I kind of have a bunch of different ones. You know, I have a Stratocaster that I like, but I also have a Stratocaster that I butchered that I like better. I kind of rebuilt it and mm-hmm. chopped it up in weird ways and stuff, and it just, it suits me. So, you know, it's like, it fits. It's like customized to me in a way that everything else just kind of falls short in general. But I just got a Gretsch guitar for the first time in my whole life. And I really love the sound of it and plays well.
Is it a newer Gretsch or an older Gretsch?
Yeah, it's actually brand new. It's a whole new model and stuff, but mm-hmm. the pickups still have that wonderful Gretsch tone. And I just never had the experience of playing with Gretches, and so I'm happy to fill that void, you know.
Chet Atkins, George Harrison.
So, yeah. But I played in a Gibson SG, like, you know, for the first, I don't know, 10, 15 years until it got stolen. Kind of like, you know, like Frank Zappa played and Peter Townsend and all those guys.
Right.
Angus, the guy.
Angus Young,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Great.
I always lusted after Les Paul, though, so.
Yeah.
So funny, you have something and you don't realize how cool it is until it's gone, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Howard, I was going to ask you, as a pure drummer, I always wonder how you guys feel about electronic drums and those kind of sounds. Is that something you kind of hate, or is it something you kind of have embraced, or what do you think about it?
Well, I realize that electronic drums, for me, I really look at them as a completely separate instrument, you know, as as not really replacing acoustic drums, and I think they're very valuable. I mean, I use trigger pads at the Groundlings all the time to trigger sound effects and percussion and things like that. I mean, they're incredibly useful. I mean, you can get a pair of finger cymbals at 90 decibels if you want, you know, which is something you certainly can't do, you know, acoustically.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating sometimes, you know, and that certainly a lot of session work for drummers went away, you know, when drum machines came along. But you know, you just have to kind of roll with it and learn the technology. And I mean, the best drum machine programmers are other drummers. So,
yeah.
So I kind of look at it that way.
Mm-hmm. And I was going to ask you about the new single. Rob, you wrote the new single. Is that right? Kill Yourself First?
Yes, I wrote Kill Yourself First.
It's doing really well on the Roots Music chart. I was going to ask you, what is the song about?
Well,
Don't tell. Okay, go ahead.
All right. It is, it's the subtitle, if there were one, would be Advice to a Mass Murderer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the title. If you do your worst, go ahead and kill yourself first.
Uh-huh. And was there any particular incident that made you
write that? It's all of them. Sorry to say, I have a close friend whose son was taken in one of those horrible shootings more than 20 years ago. And I'm very sensitive to what happens when these disasters occur. And it just seems as though they do occur. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, the scenario is somebody kills a whole bunch of people and then finally kills himself. And it's usually a guy. And so it just occurred to me things would be so much simpler if they could kill themselves first.
Right. But you do it in a more, tongue-in-cheek kind of manner.
Well, yeah.
You're not beating somebody over the head with
it. It would just be miserable and grim.
Right.
It's a horrible subject.
Right. Well, I'm glad you wrote the song because I think it drives home a point that maybe we wouldn't get if it was, we wouldn't want to listen to if it was sort of said in a more serious manner. So.
Well, it's you know, I guess it's sardonic or perhaps satire.
Yeah. But,
yes. Thank you. It does intend to address something. I don't think it's a prescription for anything.
Right.
It gets something off the chest.
Yeah, it's a cathartic kind of song.
Exactly. Thank you.
I think all good satire should offend.
Yeah.
It's attention that way.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention something. This is not a question that you've asked. You couldn't possibly, but this has just occurred to me. It doesn't need to be part of the interview. In a way, indirectly, my wife is responsible for the existence of the enzymes because, and there's a connection too, but Phyllis Katz, my wife, introduced me to Murphy.
True.
Which is 20 plus years ago.
At least.
But also, and this is, I think, also interesting, Phyllis Katz is also one of the founding members of the Groundlings.
Okay.
Which is why Greg Kaniga and then Howard and then Larry showed up. So she's not claiming any authorship, and nor am I, but it's a fact.
Right.
Well, it's an interesting history there, how y'all got together. I was going to ask you, too, you all are kind of, you're all working musicians. What other projects do you guys work on outside of the enzymes? Anybody?
Well, I run this, Simple Roger. I've been running it pretty full time. I get clients of all ages, sizes, and sexes, and they if they have a song in their heart, I try to pry it out of them, and that's one of my side businesses to keep me going here. And of course, the songwriting thing for the TV shows and stuff. It carries on. So that's some of the things that I do in the Groundlings, and that's all I can think of at the moment.
Building your studio.
No, I'm building a studio. I mentioned I'm building a studio, another one. It's a larger one, and it's been kind of a nightmare to deal with. I'm starting, it's a big structure in Valley Village that is almost finished, but I've been calling it Larry's Folly because it just seems like it'll never get done. So, But when it does, you're all invited.
And I was wondering, when people come to an enzyme show, what can they expect to see and hear?
A lot of fun, laughter, entertainment, whimsy, mirth. Mm-hmm. And a group of musicians who enjoy very much what they do.
Mm-hmm. And have you guys, do you do covers as well on your shows, at your shows?
A few. They're usually not the typical cover. They reach back 30 or 40 years or more often. We'll go to the source of a tune, perhaps, and then we'll kind of tweak it. Or maybe not just kind of. Maybe we'll tweak it a lot.
We do a little Huey Piano Smith medley, added with a little little Jimi Hendrix at the end of it.
Mm-hmm. Are you, and you set your guitar on fire and...
Not yet. Not
metaphorically.
Yet. He does play it with his teeth, though.
Yeah, when I finish the payments on it, then I'll set it up.
I think people feel that we show them a good time.
Yeah, I think they, for sure. I mean, just listening to your music, you have a good time. So, are you guys working on anything now? I know you're rehearsing today. Are you working on any new
Yes, we
music?
Are. We have a new EP forthcoming. It is lacking one tune at this point, which we're probably going to sink our teeth into in the next week or two. And then you'll be among the first to know about it.
Awesome.
We have an unnamed date that we're going to be performing at the Hillcrest Center for the Performing Arts, something we did a couple of years ago, and they want us back because it was 2 years ago they said it was the best show of the year. And they consider us more of a show rather than just music. So we're kind of a show band, I guess.
Yeah, great. And people can find your music at CD Baby and Bandcamp, Reverb Nation, Airplay Direct. And you can also like The Enzymes on Facebook as well. Any other thing I left out there with the...
Nothing you left out, but we do have a website that's almost finished. And that's at Bandzoogle. It's theenzymes.com.
Enzymes.com. Okay. Make sure you send me that when you get it.
Absolutely.
Okay. I have some original CDs that I sell on my website, LarryTreadwell.com. So if anybody wants to fish around there.
I will.
Thank you.
Well, I'll go fishing later.
Great.
Well, thanks you guys for sitting and talking with me today.
Well, Kathy, you're a really good interviewer.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you ask good questions and you actually listen to the answers. And, you know, that's not always what we get.
So ask for more money.
Oh, ask for more money for doing these interviews?
Yeah.
Well, since I'm the boss, I don't think I can get myself money.
Right.
But I appreciate you guys taking the time. And we finally got around to getting this interview done. So yes. I really appreciate your patience with that as well.
Our pleasure.
Pleasure.
And hopefully I'll be talking to you soon. We'll be out in California in October, Casey Cafe Radio will.
Really?
So. Oh.
You mean at the Far West?
Yeah, we'll be at Far West.
Right. That's Oakland again, isn't it?
Yep. I don't know if you guys are going to make it out there or not, but.
No plans.
No plans at the Mo.
Yeah. Maybe Jeanette will make us an offer we can't refuse.
I hope so. I'd like to meet you guys in person.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear you in person, too.
Well, that would be even nicer.
Yeah.
Here's a sample.
Okay, now
not too much.
Now you want more, don't you?
Yeah, I only got
not
one
too
note.
Much.
Don't give away too much. Well, we're looking forward to hearing the new music when you get it out and make sure we're the first ones to get it. So we'll be happy to play it.
Right? Yeah.
Well, thanks again, guys.
Thank you, Kathy.
All right.
I've been talking with Murphy Dunn, Rob Lewine, Larry Treadwell, and Howard Green of The Enzymes. Thanks a lot, guys, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, Kathy.
Bye.